This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake. Today on the show, a quiet revolution may be underway in biomedical research. Federal agencies, including the Food and Drug Administration and the National Institute of Health, are increasingly supporting technologies that could reduce our reliance on animal testing. From organ-on-a-chip systems and lab-grown organoids, we'll find out all about these in a bit, to advanced computer modeling and artificial intelligence. Joining me today is Lauren Stein, a pharmacologist and a researcher who now focuses on human-relevant research methods. We'll explore what's driving this shift, the scientific challenges involved, and what it could mean for the future of medicine and drug development. Lauren Stein, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. This is cutting edge technology that we're just hearing about and becoming familiar with. You hear these blurbs here and there on the media and you go, wow, we need to get a little more into this. Okay, so what part of this is about animal cruelty, animal testing, and what part of it is about testing animals is not the best way to find out what works, that there are these other technologies that are being developed that work probably better?
Definitely. So, you know, we're talking about an ethical, moral decision whether or not to use animals in scientific research in which the ends justify the means, in which we're able to develop treatments for people and cure disease, versus the technology and what actually results in safe and effective drugs. For a long time, animals have been the predominant model that drug development pipelines have used in order to determine whether or not a drug is safe for humans and well as effective. But what we've seen and what the FDA and the NIH have seen as well is that 9 out of 10 drugs that pass preclinical trials using animals fail to reach the market. And that's either because they're not effective or they're not safe for humans. And so clearly, that's a huge failure rate that we're seeing. And what we're most, you know, what we're looking at here closely is the methods by which we determine and we interrogate the biological systems and better understand drugs and how they function in the body. And so that's where these exciting new technologies are coming into play. They've been in this space for a couple decades now, growing, and we're at such a pivotal point right now in which we have a convergence of public sentiment in which more people than ever are opposing the use of animals in scientific research. The science, which is actually demonstrating a lot of proof of concepts that we're able to accurately predict whether or not a drug will be safe and effective, as well as this regulatory buy-ins that we're seeing from the FDA and the NIH, where they're really signaling both in what they're putting in their guidance, as well as the money that they're putting forth, is all signaling that they're ready to shift to these new approach methodologies, or NAMs as we like to refer to them.
So you're with the National Anti-Vivisection Society. What does that mean?
Yeah.
I know essentially what you do, but what do those words mean?
Yeah, so we've been around for 100 years. The anti-vivisection movement has been around for a long time, and that is basically studying a live organism. So cutting into a live organism to either extract tissue or implant devices to then, you know, better understand how their body works and their behavior. And so early on in the movement, it was mostly an ethical driver for which NAVs really focused, because at the time it really was the best science that existed for interrogating these systems and trying to better understand. But what we've seen, you know, over 100 years is a huge, huge shift in that technology. And that really started to see this wave, you know, around 2020, I would say, where, you know, the technology has gotten to a point where it actually could replace animals.
Right. Well, let's talk about the evolution, just so our audience knows about, how we have used animals in research to figure out, as you say, to interrogate the types of drugs and things like that that would be eventually for human use. How has it changed in those 100 years that Knaves has been around?
Yeah, I mean, I won't go all the way back. Science has changed quite a bit. I mean, if we just look at the past 10 years, it's changed incredibly. So, in more modern drug development, you have two phases. You have the preclinical testing phase, and then you have the clinical testing phase. During preclinical testing, this is where you're trying to identify potential targets for drugs. You're also just trying to understand basic physiology. How does the body function? And then when the pathology occurs, you can better understand what's going wrong. And so that is done, that's largely been done in a lab setting using in vitro skills, which are in vitro techniques, which are cell culture. So cells existing on a single layer in a dish, in which you're able to try and understand molecular mechanisms of cell behavior, of different tissues, as well as drug response. And then once you identify some potential candidates in which you're better understanding the mechanism or want to better understand the mechanism, people move to in vivo studies. And this is doing research on animals in which you are either manipulating the genetic system to try and understand what happens when a particular gene no longer is expressed or if it's overexpressed, try to mimic certain human disease states in animals by either exposing them to certain, chemicals environments. And so by doing that, you're trying to model what's happening in the human. And then with these potential candidate compounds, treating them and seeing if that is safe as well as effective in reversing whatever the symptom is it is you're trying to target. And so that's largely the pipeline in the preclinical stage. The FDA for a long time in this guidance, because they need to be sure that the studies that come out from the labs are reliable, that they can rely that these are going to actually, they're reproducible, they're robust, and that they can rely that the results they're seeing actually are indicative of safety and efficacy. And they had language in the regulations that required use in to animal models before it could go to clinical trials. And so that has been the standard for a long time. And then the FDA Modernization Act 2.0 was really the first time that Congress explicitly allowed non-animal data in these drug applications. And so this signaled a huge shift. But the problem we're seeing is, yes, the science is there, but now the regulations and the infrastructure is what's trying to catch up. And we can talk more about, the benefits of NAMs, but as far as looking retrospectively, that's kind of where we got to today, where we see this pivotal inflection point in the science.
Right. So some really wild sounding new testing that you're able to use and to bring to and to testing. And one of those is an organoid. These are all crazy things grown in the lab, organoid, and the other is an organ on a chip system. Can you explain what those are? Let's start with organ on a chip. I mean, this is just like it sounds. It's growing or
It is.
simulating kind of an organ on a chip, something as small as a.
It's like a thumb drive, the size of a thumb drive, if people still use those. So organ on a chip is really where we're seeing the most promise, actually. And so what these are is they are tiny devices. You can hold them in your hand, the size of, like, if you're familiar, a microscope slide, basically. And you have real living human cells. And there's also these channels that exist in which you can pump fluids through them to mimic blood flow, so how nutrients are carried through that particular organ, or how drugs are delivered through that organ. And also in some of these organ on chips, you can actually mimic other like physical properties such as stretch or the expansion that you see when a lung is, when you're breathing or when a heart is beating, you can start to recapitulate that in this small dish. And so it's really great at starting to mimic organ level physiology.
Wow. Okay. And then an organoid.
Yeah. So these are slightly different, not too much different, but they are small cells that basically assemble into these tiny clusters. And they are also replicating the structure of real organ systems. And the really cool part about organoids is that they can actually use the patient's own tissue. So when we're thinking about personalized medicine, organoids provide a great platform for beginning to really dive into personalized medicine.
Wow. Okay. So if you're able to use the patient's own tissue and you're growing this organoid, that is to test what kind of medications or to be able to research what kind of outcomes you'll have if you apply certain medications. Is that kind of where we're going with this?
Yeah, that's basically the gist. So something though to keep in mind is, and it's a valid concern that we often hear, is that it's not mimicking whole body physiology, right? So we're not looking at multiple organ systems. We're looking at a single organ, whether that be the gut, the liver, the kidney. And so looking to see, those are really important in how drugs are metabolized and how they act on the body, but seeing how those compounds using a patient's tissue can actually, how they'll respond to that, but it's not a whole organism. Now they're doing work, and this is more in the organ chip space where they're trying to connect multiple organ chips to have a more holistic view of, you know, what's going on in the body and having these different chips communicate with one another. And so that's, you know, we're starting to kind of see that. So it gets a little closer to mimicking whole body organisms.
So these technologies are being used currently, or are we still in a development phase?
Yeah, so we are still definitely in a development phase. It takes a lot of time to kind of move the ship. And so, as I had mentioned previously, you know, what's really driving drug development is pharma, and they don't necessarily have the infrastructure or have really integrated these NAMS technologies into their pipeline. That said, we're really excited because the federal government created this iStan program in which a liver chip was submitted in order to demonstrate validity and qualification, saying that for a very specific use case. And so this would signal for the first time that the FDA would be able to use these NAMS related data for a potential, you know, downstream clinical trial application. So we're really excited to start to see that, and it will kind of pave the way and provide a roadmap for other developers of these technologies to then, you know, create the tools needed to really be integrated into pharma. And that's where we're really going to start to see a big tipping point.
Really exciting. If you're just joining me on Cool Science Radio, I'm having a conversation with Lauren Stein. She's a pharmacologist, and we're talking about some advances in creating organ on a chip, organoid technologies. Where does AI figure in?
Oh, AI is changing biomedical research in ways that feel almost hard to believe, but the science is very real. At its core, AI is extraordinarily good at one thing, and that's making sense of an enormous amount of data. So you could basically take decades of chemical studies, millions of screening results, mountains of published literature. AI can basically take that information and process it at a scale that humans just are never going to be able to match. And so what researchers are finding is that AI models trained on some of these existing data can help predict whether a new chemical will be toxic or not, just from its molecular structure alone, before any lab work begins. So for example, there's a company in silico medicine that used AI to identify a new drug and advance that candidate to preclinical trials in just 18 months. And that process typically takes 4 to 6 years. It's the kind of thing that we're seeing. But I think what's important to remember, though, is that AI doesn't replace the biology. And so it reads the data that human-based tools are able to generate, find patterns, and help researchers make better decisions faster. But what we're really excited about is to see the combination of AI plus these organ chips. And that's where the real power is going to lie. One is going to provide, you know, the human relevant evidence, and then the other is going to help make sense of it at scale.
So this biomedical research is sounding so advanced that I have a hard time even going back to the question of animal testing. And yet, it's a big component of all of this, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you work for an organization that is trying to advance science, and then there's this other part without harming animals. Mm-hmm. So are there areas of biomedical research where animal models will still be essential, where these alternatives won't catch up for some reason or another?
Yeah, so, you know, we definitely don't want to overstate what we're currently able to do. And, you know, the FDA just released kind of a roadmap of about 3 to 5 years in which they want to start seeing like widespread replacement of animals, which many in the scientific community feels is fairly ambitious. You know, this is really going to be sort of a stepwise transition. So it's going to be one model at a time, one disease context at a time. So it's going to take quite a bit of time. It's not going to happen overnight. And so, I mean, really what we're thinking is, you know, 10 years out, the question will be, it won't be whether to use human-based tools. It will be which ones to use and how versus with the current gold standard animal models.
Right. So in figuring out which drugs will serve people to treat certain diseases, there would be this disease model that you have to introduce, right? To mm-hmm. be able to figure out which the efficacy of a certain medication. And so how does a disease model figure into all of this? In the lab with these organoids, and or organ on a chip, can you apply the disease to those? You know, how does that work?
Yeah, they're definitely working to figure that out. So similar in animals, you know, we know certain, for example, cancer, right? Certain chemicals or exposures can result in cancer, and they can do the same exposures to these cells in the organ chips. They can also isolate cells directly from the patients who have the disease, right? And then you're able to model within that organ system that disease pretty easily. And it's very human relevant, because something to think about too is a lot of animals don't naturally develop the diseases that humans develop. And we have to artificially induce this in animals. And so fundamentally, that's two very different questions you're trying to ask and hope that it translates into humans, where these human-based models start with the human tissue, sometimes start with the human disease tissue, and are able to go from there.
Right, which would be just so much more effective than using an animal, for example. It just, mm-hmm. it makes all kinds of sense. And so out there in the world of animal testing and in these labs, how is this being received? Is it being received as like, finally, we have something that's going to be much more effective and much more telling when we draw human tissue from a patient that has this disease and that's how we figure out how to treat it? I mean, what is the sentiment, and also what are the challenges?
Yeah, the sentiment is, most investigators, not to speak for most scientists, but in general, what I'm hearing is the NIH and the FDA are giving very clear signals of what it is they're looking to fund and what they want the future of biomedical research to be. Then the NIH basically changed their funding mechanisms, in which they are no longer going to accept proposals that only do research on animals exclusively, that they have to consider a new approach methodology. And that's a huge signal to anybody in the scientific research space that they need to get on board, identify collaborators who are developing and utilizing these alternative methods. That said, you know, the foundational science is there and this proof of concept is established in these very specific important contexts. But there's a significant gap in proving something works in a lab and having regulators accept it in place of these decades of established practices, even if they don't very, you know, 9 out of 10 times don't end in a drug to market. And so one of the first challenges is really this validation and qualification that I alluded to earlier. And that's just proving a tool gives reliable results across multiple labs. And then once you demonstrate that, so that these organ on a chips are, you know, you can take this liver chip into any lab and you're going to see a specific, the same readout, no matter where you're at. Then proving that those results are actually meaningful enough for regulators to act on them so that they feel confident that the outcomes are going to predict, you know, safety or efficacy. And so you have each organ and you have each disease context and each drug type, they all need their own evidence base. And so that's why I'm saying the process is slow. And so even when the technology performs well, that path is quite demanding. So that validation qualification step is a significant hurdle that the FDA and the NIH are actually really coming together to try and solve. They recently just announced the opening of this ARIVA. So that's the Office of Research Innovation, Validation and Application. And that sits within the NIH director's office. And the whole goal of ARIVA is to create systematic change. And so to help with that foundational shift across the entire scientific landscape. So very excited about that, really putting their money where their mouth is. And that's all being run under Dr. Nicole Kleinschur, who's been a huge advocate and proponent of NAMS technology for quite some time. So that's like a big challenge. And then I'd say just briefly, you know, the second is that pharma pipeline gap where drug companies are exploring the tools, but they're not yet integrating them. And so that's going to take time. And then the other, which I had mentioned earlier, was, you know, the challenge that we see that animal studies assess toxicity across the whole body simultaneously. And a specific, you know, a liver chip is only going to tell you about a liver. So building those connected multi-organ systems, that's underway.
Okay. This is crazy. You know, all of this going on with the NIH and the FDA at a time when we know that budgets are being really scaled back and a lot of research isn't taking place. But I think it was just this week that this ARIVA, the new office within the NIH that deals with this was announced. And so what do you make of that? Do you make of that, that this biomedical research is just so important that the federal government is saying, oh, yes, this is something we need to fund?
It's definitely conflicting and can be, is, you know, confusing to the scientific community. You see at world-class institutions freezes on fundings to major programs that are huge developers of these technologies. For instance, Harvard's Wyss Institute, I know they've been greatly impacted by the cuts in funding, and that significantly delays the development of NAMS while simultaneously infusing this money into these other programs, you know, to help develop NAMS. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to come out on top with this and, you know, potential shifts in funding could occur, but it's encouraging to see that despite the cuts in funding, that there is still this other mechanism by which they really are emphasizing pretty uniformly and consistently that we want to move towards new approach methodologies.
Yeah, wild. So really what this looks like is, you know, and who knows how long Say you are a patient and you're sitting in a hospital bed with a cancer. They extract some of your tissue. They take it over to the lab. They grow it. They apply some medication and find out how it works. I mean, that's a very simplistic look at it, but how far do you think they are off from doing this kind of personalized medicine?
It's really difficult to say or speculate. I would say we're definitely decades away from that. But, you know, the pace at which we're seeing technological progress is unprecedented. So, you know, really that's kind of, you know, well, we shall see. But, you know, anybody who says it's going to happen, you know, in the next 5-10 years, that's likely not going to be the case. So I'd say in a couple decades. But where we're really going to see the most advances is the toxicology, in which we're able to, instead of screening on animals whether or not a drug is safe, be able to do that in these NAMS technologies. So for us, that's a huge win.
Wow. Well, Lauren Stein with the National Anti-Vivisection Society. Is it NAVS or NAVS?
NAVS.
Okay, NAVS.org. You can look it up and find out this work that's going on. It's really promising and very exciting. A little confusing, but you've made it really clear. So thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome, Lynn. It was so great to talk with you.